when I'd finished the book and it was about to be published, we had the idea, you know, a bit too late actually, but that we would do a little album to go with it, because there had been so much music in the book, and so we thought about the kind of music that Lou would play, Lou Fox, the character, and so I did a double album. We did a thing of roots music, essentially kind of veranda music, and another CD that went with it of classical music, which was also music inspired by landscape.
We'll talk about your inspiration so much, the landscape, the coastline, as we've heard from you in the past, Tim. But this new stage play, your second play, what is this? Another year, another play? How are you finding the transition from writing novels, short stories to the theatre?
Well, it's different. It's a whole lot more social, I have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm used to working on my own, and I guess it's just taking some adjusting, but it's exciting. I mean, it's nice to work with a team of people. It's nice to work in a different format, and it's nice, as I said last year, at the age of 50, to finally, you know, do something different, because I've been a novelist for 30 something years now, and it's fun to work in a different form and to see what happens. It's when you finish a book, it's there on the page, and it's the same book, you know. I mean, it's a different book for every reader, I guess, but for me it's fixed. With a play, you're you know, you really are seeing a different play every night. People have to, you know, go out there and with their bodies in real time in front of a different crowd of people every night and make something happen. And it's perilous. It's exciting.
Yes. And I suppose when you're writing for the theatre, you're writing for that production to be performed on the stage, as opposed to writing a novel that may be transferred to film or TV, as Cloud Street was done in particular. But do you feel sometimes, is there a sense of protection? Is it hard to let go these characters you've dreamt up and you've written and you know how they should be, but they're being interpreted by other people?
Yeah, there is a kind of a letting go. I mean, I should be used to it. I mean, every time you finish a book, you are letting it go to, you know, to a readership. But this is different. It's strangely enough, writing for the theatre feels a little bit more exposing than writing on the page, and I don't quite know why that should be, except for the fact that you do sit in the audience and marinate in the strange thing that is theatre, you know, because it's a, you know, it's all happening in real time, and it could all go horribly wrong at any moment. And sometimes it's like sport, in the sense that, you know, there's a whole psychological element to the crowd, and there are times. I mean, you know, Cloud Street was also a play, and it was an extremely successful thing. It went all over the world. But the opening night was a horror show. I mean, it was happening in a big industrial space on Sydney Harbour during the summer. They had a Sydney rain thunderstorm that nobody could hear the first two acts. And there were two or three intervals, and there were fewer people coming back after every interval. And it was more or less looking like a complete disaster. And in the end, I think the dogged audience members who stayed to the end and who actually did hear the last act were like a home crowd, sort of barracking for the cast, and they, you know, they got over the line in the same way that you can be, you know, a kind of a pretty ragtag bunch of players out on the park, and the crowd gets you across the line, and so, you know, that was this great success, but it really could have been and probably should have been a disaster. The reviews would have been a disaster, but it was a triumph, and that just shows you how dangerous and exciting it is.
You can't disguise yourself, or do you disguise yourself sitting in amongst all of us watching your play, or are you Tim Winton sitting there on opening night?
Oh, on opening night, you're sort of expected to show a bit of support to the people who've done the show for you, and that's, I understand that. I'd rather be in the sound booth, I think, or the crying room, as it's called. But no, it's a different experience, and it's, you know, it's nice to be taught things by other craftspeople, and, you know, a lot of them half my age.
Now, were you inspired by the experience of your first play last year, or was this thought of extending the story of Dirt Music into something for the stage always bubbling around in your mind?
No, I mean, I wrote the plays all in a, I wrote three plays in a little bunch a couple of years ago, but this play has always, the story of this play has always been around. When Dirt Music was published, it's half, a bit less than half the length it was a few months before, if you know what I mean. I had to cut it in half in order to publish it. So there's a lot more of the story of Cloud Street that's never been published. And in my mind, you know, that when we leave Lou and Georgie, who are the characters in Dirt Music, at the end of the book, you know, there was a lot more happened in my mind and on, you know, in the earlier drafts, which didn't make it. So in a sense, it's just, it's the rest, it's a piece of the rest of the story. There's lots of other pieces, but this is just a piece of it.
And it's going to make its premiere in Albany, which is a very, very special place for you. Did you think much before choosing that as the place for the first performance?
Well, it was just a nice natural fit. I mean, it's lovely to be able to take a show to the regions before anywhere else. I mean, it's going to, you know, it's touring the state. It's opening in Albany. Then it has a Perth season, and then it goes to the Opera House. And it's always the other way. It's, you know, it seems though, if you live in the country, you get the scraps, you know, and you're supposed to be grateful for the scraps. So it's just lovely for people in, you know, Albany, Esperance, Meriden, you know, Paraburdoo, Geraldton, to see it before people in Sydney see it, you know, because it's about here, and it's why shouldn't they see it first?
Absolutely. Most of us have read Dirt Music, I'm sure. It's one of your best-selling novels. But for those perhaps who haven't, or it's been many years ago, it was that novel was the first of yours that I read, Dirt Music, before Cloud Street. What's the essence of the story and how that's going to be extended now onto the stage?
Well, Dirt Music was a kind of an awkward love story, really. A 40-year-old woman who's living with a fisherman on the Midwest coast, falls in love with a poacher, really, a guy who's going out late at night or early in the morning and botting crays and fish off other fishermen. And he's kind of from the white trash family, the outcasts of the district, and basically the story goes to the point where, you know, they end up together. She chooses him, and there's a lot of consequences that go with that. The play begins, you know, years after that they've been together, Lou and Georgie. They've gone back to his family land and planted olives, and where once there were just melons growing, and on the banks of the Moore River. Not that far from the more of a native settlement that lots of people will know about from Rabbit Proof Fence and other stories. And so it's what happens later in Georgie's life when she's a lot older than 40. And her life's changed and the world around her has changed. I mean, for one thing, it hasn't rained for 5 years. Mm. The river's dry. The old windmills are trying to suck up the last dregs out of the aquifers. Everything feels a little uncertain, and she's alone. And the first things we have on stage are sounds, really. Her waking up in her house at night alone, and a car approaching. And you know, anyone who's ever been in a country house on their own at night, and a vehicle approaches, you think, oh, what's this? I hope it's not relatives.
Speaking to Tim Winton, I know you spent some time, didn't you, with your family living in Europe, but you've got this great, great love of Australia and Western Australia. Is it something that you'd recommend if the opportunity is there for people to experience living in another place, another culture? What did it give
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. I think it was hugely influential. I think I wrote Cloud Street living in Europe. You know, I was in Ireland and in Greece and in Paris, and I think it helped me see my country much more clearly. And I think for young people who have the opportunity to do exchange when they're in school, I think it's gold, and they should seize it with both hands. And I think it would be it was never something that was available to me. And I just think it would have been fabulous to have been able to travel. And I didn't get on a plane until I was 21. You know,
really?
I'd never left the state until I was 21. And you know, I don't feel damaged as a result. But I just think it, you know, for those people who have the opportunity, I think it's an incredible thing. It just, you know, you just feel like you're seeing something that your ancestors couldn't have seen. I mean, people, you know, my relatives travelled first in chains. You know. all our tourism was done involuntarily.
It's all relative. Which brings me to the point, because it was overseas, that little snippet we heard from the First Tuesday Book Club. Is that true? The majority of your manuscript nearly got lost.
Yeah, I mean, it was my wife and me and a little boy who was three at the time, and he was asleep. So we had all our life was in four suitcases, I think, and so I had him in one case, and we just left one on the bus, and one was all the manuscripts, and it was the typescript, the handwritten manuscript, and the carbon copy, the days of carbon copy. So it was everything. It was years and years of work, and there's no way I could have reconstructed it or started again. And so every now and again, you know, when that story gets retold, a little bead of sweat does come out on my brow, because I mean, I'd been, that was my 10th book, I think. I was like an overnight success after 10 books. So if it hadn't, you know, that was the book that, you know, really went wide for us and paid the bills and put the kids through school and kept the bank from the door. And yeah, just if that person hadn't pulled the bag off the bus and said, mate, you know.
Did you ever get back in contact with him, or did he just drift off into the airport?
It was all over in a moment, but wow. I was in shock. I mean, by the time I'd gone in there, I don't remember the rest of the day. I got on a plane and went to Greece that day, and I just have no memory.
So now it's all on computer, it's saved, it's backed up, there's copies elsewhere, a lesson learned?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely keep things in different places and in different formats, and I mean, it's just so, it just makes me anxious just thinking about it.
Tim, it's so lovely to speak to you, and I know that time is beating us, but I always hear the description of you, and whenever I've seen or heard you interviewed, and meeting you now today, just laid back guy who I don't think hankers after the limelight, although so many want to speak to you. Is it hard when you're so well known just to meld in and be part of the community in Frio or wherever you are around the state?
It can be a bit of a challenge, and it's, you know, it's hard for my family, I guess, but there's probably worse things to suffer, and you know, there's no point complaining about it. I guess it does make you feel a bit self-conscious, and that's a bit awkward. But it could be worse, you know, it could be in jail. I feel really self-conscious there.
And just another thing too, I can't believe this is celebrating 20 years, but your award for young writers.
Yeah.
How important has that been? Because that's open really from kids as young as five or six, right through school.
It's been a lovely thing that the city of Subiaco and the people at the library there have supported all this time. And it's, you know, there's no money prizes, there's not... It's quite low key. The kids just get some little book tokens and things like that. But just to reassure children that it's okay to use their imagination to tell their stories, just to go inside their heads, you know. And it's been a great thing. And so many young, talented people, many of whom will never be writers. It takes an imaginative person to be a good banker, to be a good mining executive, to be a good lawyer. If you can put yourself in someone else's shoes, you get half a chance of being a decent person, I think.
Tim Winton, it's been a real delight to meet you. I wish I could have another 15 minutes chatting to you. What makes you tick and all the rest. All the best with Signs of Life and everything else that follows.
Good on you.
Tim Winton, just to let you know again, Signs of Life, it launches in Albany on the 15th of June. It's heading then to Meriden, Esperance, Margaret River, Bunbury, Mandurah, Parramadu, Tom Price, Geraldton, Moora, and starts in Perth at the State Theatre on the 21st of July. and it runs until the 18th of August. Tim, I know that you've chosen another track we might just go out with. Track 13, I think. Can you remember which one you've chosen?
I think this is Lucky White Point Breakdown. This is just a little bit of upbeat nonsense.
Good on you, Tim. Lovely to meet you.